All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going to be digging into something I bet you've never really thought about too much, but it's actually pretty critical to, well, survival, and not just for animals, but for robots too.
Oh, absolutely.
It's this whole idea of how things flip themselves back over when they end up, you know, on their backs. Like, imagine, I don't know, a beetle falls off a leaf, lands on its back.
Yeah. Or
you've got a robot, you know, exploring some other planet, takes a tumble, ends up upside down.
Right.
They've got to be able to get back upright.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way they do it, that's where things get really fascinating.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable when you think about it. You see, like, a cockroach struggling on its back, waving its legs around. You might just chuckle and think, oh, that's funny. But what's going on there is it's this really intricate combination of physics and mechanics. And, you know, as you said, it's not just about understanding, like, the natural world for curiosity's sake.
Right.
It actually has some pretty important implications for, you know, building robots that are more robust, more adaptable, and can handle those kinds of unexpected situations.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what we're diving into today. This really cool research led by Dr. Chen Li and his team over at Johns Hopkins. They've taken this really interesting approach of, you know, actually looking at cockroaches doing their thing, you know, flipping themselves over. And then they built robots inspired by what they saw. And they even created these physics models to try to, like, really nail down the principles behind how this works. And today we're focusing specifically on, you know, how these creatures and their robot counterparts manage to self-right, specifically when they're on the ground.
And that's a really important distinction, right? Because when something's on the ground, the physics of self-righting are completely different from, let's say, a cat flipping in midair, right, to land on its feet, or a fish reorienting itself in the water. Mm-hmm. On the ground, it's all about this interaction with a solid surface, pushing against it, using friction, leveraging your body shape to actually generate the forces you need to flip back over.
Okay, so let's unpack this a bit. I mean, where did this whole investigation even begin for Dr. Lick? What sparked their initial curiosity with these cockroach acrobatics?
Well, it's funny. It actually started with, like, a totally different problem.
Yeah.
They were actually looking at how these discoid cockroaches move through really cluttered environments, like dense leaf litter.
Okay.
And they noticed that their kind of rounded body shape actually helped them, kind of let them wedge themselves into tight spaces and roll through those narrow gaps.
Oh, interesting.
But, you know, sometimes in this process, they would flip over, right?
Mm.
And what really caught their attention was how quickly and effectively they could use their wings to push against the ground to right themselves. It's almost like an automatic reflex.
So, like a happy little accident then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Bit of tumbling led to a whole new line of inquiry.
And it sounds like from observing that, they went on to actually building a robot.
Exactly. They were so inspired by how well the cockroaches recovered that they thought, you know, what if we build a robot that could do that too? So they built this small six-legged robot, you know, with a similar rounded shell, hoping it could also navigate those cluttered environments. And it did. It could roll through obstacles pretty well. But when it flipped over, often it would just get completely stuck.
Oh.
And that's where they realized, you know, there's something more to this self-righting ability. So they went back to the drawing board and they redesigned the shell, splitting it into two separate controllable wings, you know, kind of like what the cockroach has. And the idea was to see if the robot could use these wings to pitch its body, to, you know, rotate end over end, almost like doing a somersault.
Oh, like a somersault. Interesting. So they went from observing a biological system, like in nature, to creating this sort of simplified robotic version to try to understand it.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the cockroaches rolling earlier, and it reminded me of something I think I recall about how turtles flip themselves over. Was there a connection there in the initial thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, the team, they drew inspiration from earlier research that had looked at how turtles self-right based on their body shape.
Mm.
And this research used a really cool concept called a two-dimensional potential energy landscape.
Mm.
And you can think of it like a hilly terrain, right?
Okay.
The cockroach starts upside down in a valley.
Okay.
And it needs to generate enough energy to climb over this hill, which is the energy barrier, to get to the upright valley on the other side.
Mm.
And the turtle research showed how the shape of a turtle shell actually affects how high and how steep that hill is.
Oh, wow.
You know, turtles with more dome-shaped shells, they have a lower barrier, so they can often right themselves just by rocking back and forth a little. But the ones with flatter shells, they've got a higher barrier, and they need to use their limbs, their neck, much more actively to flip over. Yep. And so this idea of an energy landscape and how body shape can influence the effort needed to change orientation, it became a really useful way for the researchers to start thinking about self-riding in cockroaches and their robots.
Okay, so they have this robot with wings that could pitch its body, you know, kind of do a somersault motion. What did they actually learn from experimenting with that? What were some of the key takeaways from those initial robotic trials?
Well, they found that, you know, the bigger and faster the push the robot could generate with his wings, the more mechanical energy it produced and the more likely it was to successfully flip over and do it more quickly too.
That makes sense, right? Like more effort equals higher chance of success. Pretty intuitive.
Exactly. It aligns with like basic physics.
Right.
But, you know, that robot was using a very straightforward movement, right? Like just one axis of rotation.
Yeah, that's somersault. Yeah.
Exactly. And so the researchers started wondering, well, are cockroaches really using such a simple motion when they're flipping themselves over? I mean, they've got these complex bodies.
Right.
Many more degrees of freedom. So they decided to take a closer look at how real cockroaches were actually doing it.
Okay, so they moved from the robot back to the real cockroaches. And what did they see? I mean, was it just this clean, simple flip like the robot was doing?
Not at all. It turns out it's way more complex. Yeah. They actually found that self-riding on the ground, for these cockroaches, it's actually quite difficult, quite energy intensive.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, they almost always managed to get upright eventually, it often took them multiple attempts. And unlike the robot's, you know, single-axis pitching motion, the cockroaches were using this whole repertoire of strategies.
Okay.
And they would often switch between them, sometimes even within a single self-riding attempt.
Give me an example. What were some of these, like, different approaches that you saw? Did each type of cockroach have, like, a go-to move?
Yeah, so the Madagascar hissing cockroaches, they often arched their body into a, like, a distinct C shape to try to roll onto their side.
Oh, okay.
And then once they were on their side, they'd use their legs to push and scramble until they were fully upright. And interestingly, they would sometimes try to twist their bodies, but it never really seemed to work for them.
Mm.
The American and the discoid cockroaches, they tended to be more dynamic. They would use these really rapid pushes with their wings or their legs against the ground. And it was almost like they were generating enough, you know, kinetic energy, that energy of motion,
yeah,
to kind of catapult themselves over.
Oh, wow.
It's really quite impressive.
So more going on than just a simple rotation.
Much more, yeah.
And you mentioned that dynamic self-righting using kinetic energy. How does that relate back to that energy landscape idea that we talked about with the turtles?
That's a great question. So, you know, with the American and discoid cockroaches,
mm-hmm.
because they were using that momentum, that kinetic energy, to carry them over the energy barrier,
yeah.
It's kind of like, imagine you're trying to roll a ball over a hill.
Right.
If you give it a really good push at the start, that momentum might be enough to get it to the top, even if you're not constantly pushing it.
Okay.
Right. And that's different from like a more static approach, where you might be slowly trying to lift the ball, or in this case, the cockroach's center of mass, over that barrier.
Okay.
So it's using momentum to its advantage.
And it sounds like these movements weren't always perfectly coordinated or efficient, right? Like there was a bit of a flailing involved.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The researchers noticed that like the main movements for propulsion, you know, whether it was the wings pushing or the legs pushing, they were often accompanied by all these other movements that, you know, almost looked random.
Hmm.
Like they would be bending and twisting their abdomens, their legs would be flailing around in the air. And there was a lot of variability in like the direction and the force and the speed and the coordination of all these extra movements.
Randomness and trying to get upright sounds a bit counterintuitive, doesn't it? You'd think they'd want to be as controlled as possible.
Right. You would think so. But what's really interesting is that, you know, there's this distinction between the apparent randomness you see in a single attempt,
mm-hmm.
and the overall patterns when you look at many attempts. So while any given cockroach trying to right itself might look a little erratic, you know, if you look at many trials for each species, they actually found that each species tended to follow a general, like a stereotyped pattern of how they use these different strategies.
Oh, okay.
So it's stochastic, which means there's randomness within each event, but there's still these underlying predictable tendencies for each type of cockroach.
So even with all the seeming chaos, there's still kind of like a species-specific game plan.
Exactly. Exactly. They've got a general approach, but they're not afraid to mix things up a little bit within that approach.
And how did that three-dimensional potential energy landscape that we talked about earlier help in understanding these more complex movements?
Well, you know, building on that two-dimensional model they use for the turtles, Dr. Lee's team created this simplified three-dimensional potential energy landscape.
Right.
Specifically for cockroaches.
Okay.
And by modeling their body shape, you know, roughly as ellipsoids, these elongated rounded shapes, they could calculate the potential energy of the cockroach at different angles.
Okay.
So different amounts of pitch, you know, tipping forward and backward and roll, tipping side to side. And this three-dimensional model revealed something really important. For these cockroaches, their bodies are longer than they are wide and wider than they are tall. And that means that rolling the body actually requires overcoming a lower potential energy barrier compared to pitching. So the more the cockroach could roll its body, the less energy it would need to get back upright.
That makes sense. Like rolling over that shorter dimension is less of an uphill battle, so to speak.
Size.
So did they actually see that the cockroaches were rolling more when their attempts were successful?
Yeah, they did. They analyzed the cockroaches' pitch and roll movements really carefully at different points during their attempts. And then they mapped those movements onto this three-dimensional energy landscape. And they found that across all three species, the successful attempts had way more body roll than the failed ones.
Oh.
It's a pretty clear pattern. And they also noticed that even though the overall movements often looked very complex, you know, not always just in a single plane, the cockroaches tended to reach similar body orientations at their highest point of center of mass, regardless of whether they ultimately succeeded or failed in that particular attempt.
Hmm.
And this suggests that, you know, there's some underlying physical constraints at play, kind of guiding their movements. And what's really cool is that this finding actually lined up with what they had seen in their initial robot experiments. Remember how they programmed the robot's wings to open asymmetrically, inducing more roll? Well, when they did that, the robot was more likely to self-right. So both the robots and the real cockroaches were showing this same principle, that rolling is really advantageous.
It's amazing how the findings from those robotic models and the live observations, they really reinforce each other. It's like a beautiful synergy there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you mentioned earlier that self-righting is strenuous for these cockroaches. How did the researchers actually figure that out? What was the evidence for that?
Well, they found that the increase in the cockroach's center of mass height during successful self-righting attempts was only very slightly greater than in the attempts that failed.
Hmm.
So that tiny difference in how much they could lift themselves, it was often the deciding factor in whether they ended up upright or back on their shell.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, combined with the fact that they often needed to try multiple times, this really suggested that they were operating right at the edge of their physical capabilities.
Mm.
You know, just barely generating enough work to overcome that energy barrier.
Working hard.
Yeah. And there was also this earlier separate research that looked at discoid cockroaches specifically. And they were looking at how they used just a single leg to push themselves upright.
Okay.
And that study found that a single hind leg can generate ground reaction forces up to 8 times higher than what they produce during high-speed running.
Wow.
It's incredible.
That's a lot of effort for something that seems so simple.
Right.
So with all these observations, you know, the multiple strategies, the randomness, that crucial role of rolling, the fact that it's so strenuous, the discoid cockroaches method of using its legs and its wings together, that really emerged as kind of a key model system for further study, right?
Exactly, yeah. This specific strategy in discoid cockroaches became, you know, a central focus because it really seemed to encapsulate so many of the interesting things that they were seeing across all the species.
Mm.
So, you know, when these roaches are flipped over, they typically start by opening their wings, pushing against the ground, which pitches their body upwards.
Huh.
But they very rarely actually manage to do a full flip just using that wing motion. Instead, they often end up in this kind of precarious balance.
Oh.
Almost like, you know, if you try to balance a book on its spine. They're not quite upright, but they're not fully on their back either.
Right, right.
It's very unstable.
Yeah.
And so successful self-righting usually happens when they then manage to roll over to one side from this unstable state. And this rolling is often accompanied by, you know, vigorous, seemingly random flailing of their legs and other body movements.
So it's like the wings get them partway there, and then the legs kind of nudge them over that final hurdle.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
It's this really cool two-stage process.
That is cool. So how do they go about modeling this more complex two-stage process?
Well, to really get at the physics behind it, they built a more sophisticated robot, this time specifically designed to mimic this discoid cockroach strategy. And this robot, it even had a head that protruded forward, which helped to create that same kind of triangular base of support and that metastable state that you see in the real cockroach.
Oh, wow.
And they also intentionally limited how much the robot's wings could open, so it couldn't just flip over purely by pitching. This way, they could really study the role of those leg movements in inducing that crucial rolling motion.
So it was a more accurate model this time.
Much more accurate, yeah. More biologically inspired.
Okay, and this refined robot, did it have like legs or a leg to replicate those random perturbing motions that the cockroaches were doing?
Yes, exactly. So to simplify those complex leg movements of the cockroach, they equipped the robot with a single pendulum-like leg that could oscillate back and forth laterally. And this leg, it could provide these controlled disturbances, kind of like those seemingly random leg movements in the cockroach. And they carefully designed the robot's leg motion to be, you know, dynamically similar to what they had observed in the animal. And so when they ran experiments with this robot, they had it repeatedly opening and closing its wings and at the same time oscillating its leg. And the robot showed this really similar self-righting behavior.
Mm-mm.
It would often get stuck in that intermediate unstable state, needing multiple attempts to finally roll over and become upright.
So the robot mirrored the cockroach. That's pretty neat.
It really did. It was a really compelling demonstration of how those seemingly random movements actually contribute to the process.
Now, how did they use this more advanced robot to understand that energy landscape that we were talking about earlier?
Well, because they could track the robot's three-dimensional body rotation and its wing movements, you know, throughout the entire process. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't really do that with a live animal because their bodies are so complex and there can be obstructions and things like that.
Right, right.
But with the robot, they could track all of it very precisely.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that they could reconstruct what they called an evolving potential energy landscape.
An evolving energy landscape, so it's not static anymore.
Exactly. It's not just a fixed landscape like you would have for a rigid object.
Yeah.
It actually changed in real time as the robot was moving its wings.
Wow, that's a whole new level of complexity. What did that evolving energy landscape reveal? Like, what were the key insights?
Well, it showed that while the pushing action of the wings, you know, it effectively reduced the energy barrier for pitching the robot upwards, it wasn't usually enough for the robot to fully self-right by just pitching. However, that wing movement also had this other effect. It significantly lowered the energy barrier for rolling. And that's really important because it meant that even that small amount of kinetic energy that the oscillating leg was generating could be enough to overcome that reduced roll barrier.
Oh, I see.
And that's how the robot would self-right.
It's like the wings prime it for that final roll.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they even found that the more vigorously the leg oscillated, the higher the probability of successful self-righting. So this suggested that, you know, in the animal, all those seemingly random leg movements, the other body contortions like leg scraping or abdomen flexing, they're probably contributing in a similar way. You know, injecting a bit of extra kinetic energy in the roll direction, or maybe even tilting that potential energy landscape just slightly at just the right moment.
So it's not just random flailing. There's a method to the madness.
Yeah, there's definitely a purpose behind those movements.
So the stereotyped body rotation patterns that they observed in those cockroaches during self-righting, could that be a consequence of these physical constraints, you know, the way they interact with the ground and how they have to navigate those evolving energy barriers?
That's exactly the conclusion they reached.
Mm.
You know, when they visualized the robot's rotation trajectories on this dynamic evolving energy landscape, they saw this really consistent set of paths for both the attempts that succeeded and the ones that failed.
Okay.
So it really implied that those predictable patterns of body movement that we see in cockroaches, they're not necessarily because the cockroach is like consciously planning it out, but they're largely dictated by the, you know, the physics of the situation, the interaction with the ground, and the need to navigate these changing energy barriers.
It's like the laws of physics are kind of dictating the dance moves.
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
Now let's go back to that seemingly random leg flailing, because it turns out they actually dug even deeper into that with computer simulations, didn't they?
They did, yeah. To really get a handle on how that randomness and the coordination between the wing and leg movements might affect their ability to self-right, they developed a really detailed multi-body dynamic simulation of their refined robot.
Okay.
And this wasn't just a simple model. It took into account all the different factors, like the mass distribution, the joint movements, the forces involved, and they even validated this simulation against their data from the physical robot, so they knew it was pretty accurate.
Right.
And the beauty of using a simulation is that they could control and vary the level of randomness in the robot's movements and run tons of trials, you know, under the exact same conditions, something you can't really do with a real robot or a live animal.
That's true. So what did they learn? What did those simulations reveal about the potential role of that chaotic leg movement?
Well, they found that introducing a substantial level of randomness, the timing between the wing opening and closing and the leg oscillations, it actually boosted the probability of successful self-righting, especially in what they call the critical regime, where the robot was just barely able to overcome the energy barrier. And interestingly, when they went back and measured the natural randomness in the cockroach's own movements, they found that it was way higher than what they observed during those more rhythmic behaviors like walking or running. So it's like they're deliberately incorporating randomness into their self-righting strategy.
So sometimes a little bit of chaos can be helpful.
Yeah, it's like they're shaking things up until they stumble upon the right combination that works.
But they also, you know, took this a step further, right? To really solidify that idea of timing and coordination, they developed a whole other model, right?
They did, yeah. To really get to the heart of why that timing and coordination was so important, they developed this very simplified analytical model, what they called a two-dimensional template model. And this model really focused on the planar rolling dynamics of self-righting, you know, stripping away some of the complexity of that full robot to make the underlying physics super clear.
Okay.
And because it was simplified, it allowed them to actually derive these precise mathematical equations of motion and study how the system's energy accumulates and how that relates to the energy barrier it needs to overcome.
And what did this template model reveal about the importance of coordination?
Well, it clearly showed that successful self-righting really depends on accumulating enough mechanical energy to get over that potential energy barrier.
Okay.
And the key finding was that well-coordinated appendage motions, meaning the timing between the movements was just right, what they called favorable phase offsets, were way more effective at accumulating that energy.
Oh, wow.
So those well-timed movements, they led to a bigger surplus of energy, which meant a much higher likelihood of overcoming that barrier and actually flipping back upright. And this connects back to that whole idea of randomness being beneficial, because that inherent variability helps them, you know, occasionally just stumble upon those really effective timing relationships.
It all comes together.
It does, yeah.
So, I mean, to summarize this incredible, surprisingly complex journey we've been on, ground self-righting in cockroaches, it's tough. It often involves multiple attempts, a variety of strategies. They're using these combinations of movements to propel themselves, and then these other movements that seem more random to perturb their body. And crucially, generating more body roll seems to be key because it lowers that energy barrier they need to overcome.
Right.
And those consistent patterns of body rotation we see, they're not necessarily a sign of some rigid plan, but more like a consequence of those physical constraints of interacting with the ground and those seemingly random leg flailing movements. Well, it turns out they can be genuinely beneficial, helping them find the right coordination to get back on their feet.
Yeah, it's a beautiful illustration of how these really fundamental principles of physics, they have this profound influence on even seemingly simple biological behaviors.
It makes you appreciate all the intricate mechanics that are happening behind the scenes in something that we might just take for granted.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for you, the listeners, you know, I want you to consider this. How might these principles, you know, this back and forth between propulsion and perturbation, the need to overcome these energy barriers, even that unexpected benefit of randomness, apply to other complex motor tasks that you see out there in the world, whether it's in animals, in human movements, or, you know, even in the design and operation of robots? What role could a bit of controlled chaos play in helping to do things more effectively?
It's a fantastic question to think about. And for anyone who's curious to learn more, you know, the research in this area is constantly evolving. Future directions include looking at, you know, more species with different body shapes, seeing how self-righting works in more difficult environments, like on very uneven terrain or surfaces that can deform. And, you know, researchers are also really interested in figuring out what role sensory feedback plays. You know, how does the animal feel the ground? How does it adjust its movements based on what it's sensing? And then there's also the question of how to extend these principles to, you know, limbless animals, creatures in underwater environments.
Right.
There's so many exciting avenues to explore in this fundamental area of both biology and robotics.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much for joining me for this deep dive. I've learned a lot. Hopefully you have too. And to all of you listening out there, thank you for exploring the surprisingly complex world of self-writing with us. And until next time, keep those curiosity gears turning.